It's been a too long time with no peace of mind. I'm ready for the times to get better. I've got to tell you, I've been racking my brain, hoping to find a way out. I've had enough of this continual rain. Changes are coming, no doubt. It's been a too long time with no peace of mind, and I'm ready for the times to get better.
Hello, my friends.
You seem to want from me what I cannot.
It's October 24th, 2022. My name is Critch, and you are tuned into Canadian Patriot Radio.
I have a drink that I
my apologies for being off the air for an extended period of time. Trying to get ready for the winter. Kind of an appropriate tune. That, my friends, is Cody Jinks. And there's this new resurgence. I shouldn't say new, but there's a resurgence of old-sounding country kind of hitting the radio waves lately, and I'm really loving it. And he's one of the artists that I really like. The other is C.R. Farrell. Both really good. So there's a lot to cover. The commission into the Emergencies Act is kind of not really a surprise. Like, I'd like to be surprised by what we're seeing, but there's a whole bunch of finger pointing going on and nobody wants to take any blame. We are getting little diamonds in the rough out of it so far. You know, basically admitting that there was no criminal activity. This is all coming from the people that are on side with the the government, multi-level government response to the protests that happened in Ottawa in January and February. Now, these people like to call these illegal occupations, and nothing could be farther from the truth. You have the right to protest in this. You have the right to assembly. You have the right to protest in this country. What was illegal was how the government handled it. You guys are all well aware of this. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I just kind of wanted to point that out, the manipulation of language that they're trying to do. So every time if you're watching this commission at all, like there was this interim chief Bell on today, and he kept saying that. And I was just like, do you not even understand the charter in this country? To even say illegal occupation is an admittance of stupidity. Like, if you're going to repeat that rhetoric, you're not very smart. Like I said, there's so much going on. The Liberals have froze the sale and transfers and everything to do with handguns. So what I wanted to do in the opening of the show was take you guys to a clip from the CCFR, the Canadian Coalition of Firearms Rights. There's a lawyer, Solomon Friedman, that is on the Public Safety Committee. Like, that's the thing about this handgun freeze. That's all it is right now, because the bill hasn't passed, C-21 hasn't passed, and there's a commission going through it. So is it going to pass? I don't know. You've got a lot of people with heads on their shoulders speaking out against this. And you and I and everybody with a rational mind knows that stopping legal gun owners from buying and selling handguns is not going to do a fucking thing for crime in this country. At all. Criminals haven't given two shits about laws ever. So what are you doing? You're stopping people from being able to defend themselves? Is that really what you want to do? Anyway, my friends, I want you to listen to this clip from lawyer Solomon Friedman. It's really good. You've got to hear what he had to say at the commission.
Thank you for inviting me to address you today. It's always a pleasure to appear before this committee, and particularly in person this time. In fact, since 2011, I have testified over a dozen times before this committee and others on proposed firearms legislation and regulation. In that same time, reflective of Parliament's consistently inconsistent push and pull approach to firearms legislation, the Annotated Firearms Act, The firearms law reference text, which I co-author, has appeared in no less than four editions. Instead of applying an evidence-based, principled focus to lawmaking, governments have taken a piecemeal and haphazard approach, which has favored symbolism over substance and rhetoric over rational decision-making. While this might be good news for legal authors, publishers, and booksellers, it is decidedly bad news for law-abiding gun owners and Canadians generally. Bill C-21 is the latest extension of this trend. Given the time constraints which have been placed upon this committee's work, I will focus my attention on Bill C-21's proposed prohibition on the transfer of restricted firearms, that is handguns, to licensed private individuals, or more accurately, the deferred confiscation of 1 million lawfully owned restricted firearms, which were purchased legally, used and stored safely, and have never posed a risk to public safety. In my view, there are three fundamental problems with this provision. First, support for this measure comes from fundamentally bad data. Instead of addressing the core causes of handgun offenses, namely the factors that drive individuals into gang activity, like poverty, addiction, and marginalization, or even focusing on the true source of the vast majority of handguns used in criminal offenses, handguns smuggled into Canada from the United States, this bill targets the law-abiding, without making even the smallest dent in handgun crime. In February, I appeared before this committee to give testimony for your study on gun control, illegal arms trafficking, and street gangs. As I said then, good decision-making requires good data. I cited an example of bad data, which has been used to justify bad policy, and that is the oft-heard assertion that 70% of traceable crime guns have a domestic origin. This statistic is a good example of a number that is true, false, and misleading all at the same time. To start, this counts only those firearms that are traceable. It is therefore, by definition, a number which will skew towards domestic firearms, as those are much easier to trace. It doesn't count firearms with obliterated serial numbers or foreign firearms that cannot be traced. Next, the definition of crime gun further self-selects and obscures our focus. Crime guns generally refer to firearms, including, by the way, pellet guns and replica firearms, seized by police in the course of their duties. This includes both offense and public safety-related seizures. That definition does not differentiate between a handgun used in a gang shooting and 100 non-restricted, safely stored firearms which are seized from an elderly gun collector who is the subject of a police wellness check because his daughter has not heard from him in days. You can see now why that 70% number may be true on its face, but is really irrelevant to assessing what measures are necessary to address violent gun offenses. In fact, in your report, this committee agreed with the accuracy of my critique. Skewed and manipulated data can never be the basis for evidence-based policy. Canadians are entitled to legislation drafted on the basis of empirical data, not misinformation. The second fundamental problem with the legislation is that it is a distraction and a gross misdirection of policing and other justice sector resources, resources which are in short supply and are desperately needed to address the core causes of crime. While criminal legislation looks free on its face, it does not require an upfront expenditure. Criminal defense lawyers know all too well the costs of increased criminalization and the ever-expanding criminal code. We as a group are not surprised as the justice system sags under the weight of well-intentioned amendments and justice is delayed, denied, and charges are ultimately stayed by the courts. Finally, this legislation suffers from the fundamental flaw that is endemic to much of this government's criminal law reform. It is a solution in search of a problem. Like the hasty elimination of centuries-old procedural protections like peremptory challenges for juries or the preliminary inquiry, or case-specific responses to unpopular acquittals, which limit the rights of the accused to tender admissible evidence, these justice amendments bear the hallmarks of a government which legislates based on tweets and soundbites, without taking into account the real consequences, unintended or otherwise, of their criminal law policy. And this is certainly true of the deferred confiscation provisions of Bill C-21. Legally obtained handguns in the possession of law-abiding citizens are not and have never been a public safety problem. In 2019, Vancouver Police Chief Adam Palmer, head of the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, explicitly rejected the public safety benefits of any such handgun ban, calling it, quote, naive to the realities of organized crime and smuggling. When defense counsel agrees with the policy position advanced by Canada's police chiefs, it is just one more indication that these provisions are not based in evidence or data, but are political in nature. And once again, has been the case for each subsequent amendment to our firearms law, law-abiding Canadians, citizens who have complied with the law time and again, will pay the price. And worse yet, Public confidence in our legislators inevitably erodes even further.
Can you wrap up, sir, quickly?
As it becomes crystal clear for all to see, substance once again takes a backseat to symbolism. Thank you very much for your time.
Political virtue signaling. Wayward fascists that masquerade as liberals pushing a globalist agenda on Canadian legally... legal gun owners in Canada. That's basically what we're dealing with. Anyway, my friends, let's get this show started. We got a lot to do. We're going to cover a lot of Danielle Smith today. And then we've got an interview with an embalmer out of the U.S. that you need to hear. And we also got the Minister of Public Health telling us, warning us, I guess, about staying up to date on our COVID vaccines. Anyway, that and more when we come back. Welcome, friends, to Canadian Patriot Radio, where conspiracy is not theory and political corruption finds the spotlight. CPR, we are committed to upholding Canadians' God-given rights to life, liberty, and freedom with all thy sons. Command. Welcome back, my friends. Like I said in the pre-show, I'm blown away by Danielle Smith. So far, she is exactly what we've needed in this country. She seems to be doing and saying everything that she promised in her campaign, and it's incredible to see the response to globalism. How basically unipolar politicians are now rising to power. Against you know, the powerful globalist wishes. It's incredible to see. But before we get into some of the things that Danielle Smith is doing and saying in Alberta, I just kind of wanted to highlight the fact that the recording that was leaked that shows that Bill Blair and probably the Prime Minister definitely did indeed pressure Brenda Luckey. Now, you've heard a lot of people talking about it, but the one thing is a lot of people actually haven't heard the recording. You haven't heard Brenda Luckey admitting this on tape. Well, I've got that recording. So this is a clip that comes to us by way of Mark Strahl, MP. And it exposes the fact that Bill Blair stood up in the House of Commons and in front of he testified in front of commissions that he didn't interfere, blah 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 blah. He lied through his teeth. So did Brendan Luckey, and so did Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. But you got to hear this entire clip because it's just good. It highlights all of it. So let's listen to this together, and we'll comment after.
Advised the members that there was no interference. At no point did our government pressure interfere in the operational decisions of the RCMP. It's been very clearly articulated in the commissioner's statements from yesterday.
There was no interference.
There was no interference in this case for any reason.
There was no interference in this matter.
There was no interference. We did not place any pressure upon the RCMP for any reason.
request that I got from the minister's office, and I shared with the minister that that in fact it was going to be in the news release, and it wasn't. Does anybody realize what's going on in the world of handguns and guns right now? The fact that they're in the middle of trying to get a legislation going, the fact that that legislation is supposed to actually help police, and the fact that the very little information I have to be put in sticky notes at around 11:30 this morning could not be accommodated. The little one line that I needed to be put into Jared's speaking notes, how did it get to be that that one line was going to be in his speaking notes? Waiting for the Prime Minister to call me so I can apologize.
And at all times, I have maintained the principle that we will never interfere with the operations of the RCMP.
Waiting to apologize to the Prime Minister. You heard it. Bill Blair, he's done. Who cares about Bill Blair anyway? Old drunk. Yeah. Who knows if he's alleged drunk and allegedly a lot of other things, which I don't want to get myself in trouble. But the PM is the target. We've got to get rid of Justin Trudeau. And there is enough evidence on that recording right there that that should be a full-on investigation. Now, will we see it? Who knows? This guy skirted around his racist behaviors, an NDA where he paid a underage girl for a non-disclosure agreement about sexual engagements that they had while he was a teacher at West Grey. So, you know, the fact that this guy can get around that and umpteen million money laundering schemes that he's, you know, the We Foundation and everything else, and basically the Liberal Party got caught with their hands through We child trafficking. But that's one thing you never actually hear about. That was buried so quick, just like the NDA. But this one's a little tough because this is getting picked up by the mainstream media. Like, you know, the Winnipeg Sun and everybody's reporting on this Brenda Luckey thing. So will they try and just throw Luckey under the bus? I think it's too late for Bill Blair. I think he's F2. So all we can do is watch and hope and cross our fingers. But what I want to do next is I want to segue into the fact that there is actual hope with some of the provincial politicians that are coming to the forefront right now. And that is Danielle Smith. You've got to hear what Danielle Smith has been saying and now is actually doing.
Finally, the Ottawa problem. There can be no doubt that the current NDP Liberal Alliance is just the latest in a long line of Ottawa governments that have frustrated the legitimate aspirations of hardworking Albertans. That stops now. When Ottawa announces policies and laws that attack our economy or violate the rights of our people, or when Ottawa seeks to take control of our sovereign areas of provincial jurisdiction, our UCP government will not enforce those laws and policies in this province, period. Clear. I will never, ever apologize for standing up for the people of Alberta and the province that I serve. So, we will pass the Sovereignty Act, Work has already begun on crafting it. We worked on it earlier this week at the caucus retreat. We still have further work to do, but I've asked for it to be ready by the time I take my seat in the legislature. We will then introduce it, and we will pass it, and we will use it to push Ottawa back into its own lane every single time that they step out of line and intrude on our constitutional rights. Alberta will no longer ask permission from Ottawa to be prosperous and free.
So the Sovereignty Act is definitely going through in Alberta. And if that's not good enough, you got to hear another clip that I selected for you guys to hear. Like, she is just top notch. You got to hear this too, my friends.
So one of the things that we'll be coming through with in the fall as well is a change to the Human Rights Code to make it illegal to discriminate against anyone on the basis of their COVID vaccination status. Now, I'm recognized that there are still some organizations and some businesses in Alberta that is doing that. And I just want to sort of give you fair warning that we are going to be making a serious pivot in that regard. And I would just ask if you would work with us to align your policies with the direction that we want to go in Alberta, because we want to send the message to the community and to the world community and to the investment markets that this is a place that is open for business, that this is a place that believes in freedom. This is a place that believes in free enterprise, and this is a place where we're not going to be making arbitrary decisions that are going to disproportionately impact the small and medium businesses in this province.
How awesome was that? So, you know, she's she's sticking by what she campaigned on, and that's what we need to see. We need to see honest people elected into these public service positions that actually listen to their constituents and people and do the will of the people. And Danielle Smith, from all outward appearances, appears to be doing that. So I'm hoping she is the first of many. Now, in the sketch, it's looking like Scott Moe is very very much aligning himself with what Danielle Smith is all about. I think he's wise too. For those of us out west, particularly in Alberta and Saskatchewan, we know we're kind of joined at the hip, these two provinces, anyway. So typically what one does, the other will do. So it'll be interesting to see how Scott Moe reacts to this. Now, obviously we know BC is still quite socialist under their leadership right now. I doubt you'll see them get on board, but it is looking like Manitoba is willing to play ball as well. So, and the Yukon also jumped on when it comes to the guns. You know, this blanket suspension of handguns. Yukon also jumped on board with that. So you've got Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Yukon. I think I might be missing one, but There's a group of provinces now that are saying no, they're not going to enforce this handgun ban, and they're not going to kick down doors and repossess, or the RCMP, if they are still going to listen to this unpassed bill at this point to confiscate legally acquired firearms, they're going to have to seek their funding somewhere else. Okay, what else did I have for you guys before we get into this interview? The interview that I'm talking about was on Keep the Republic with Dr. Daniel Babinski, and he interviewed Richard Hirschman, who is an embalmer in the U.S. And it's very, very interesting because he gets into the clotting, he gets into the timelines, he's talking about what we all know is happening, and it's just a really well-done interview. But before we get into that, I just got a clip from our health minister, Jean Duclos, basically threatening Canadians. Basically saying if you don't stay up on your vaccination or stay up to date with your vaccination, that they are indeed going to attempt lockdowns again.
Canadians until now have been very good at acknowledging and meeting and following the public health measures, and we'll need to continue doing that because COVID-19 is not over. The second thing is that many of the measures that you point to are provincial and territorial measures, and they have, provinces and territories have our full confidence in their ability to integrate and to manage local public health measures according to their local public health conditions. The third thing is that, as we know, the federal government will always do whatever is necessary to protect the safety and the health of Canadians. Protecting the safety of people is the core responsibility of any government.
I gotta pause it right there. Protecting the health and safety of Canadians by pushing now a proven deadly shot on its people, a government that's doing this, is criminal. Like, this is a false reality. Like, I don't know how people watch this and don't think it's complete madness. It's a true false reality. These people live in an echo chamber where they hear their own rhetoric bounce off the walls and they think it's true. Like, I don't know how else you can get people to stand in front of the country and claim this garbage when people, the average person, knows that that these shots are very detrimental to your health. Let's carry on with this fool.
And that will be our core responsibility over time. We don't know what is coming. However, we know that as the Prime Minister said again last week, to reduce the possibility, the likelihood that more measures will need to be put in place, a key thing we can do together is to be up to date in terms of our vaccination. If we haven't had a COVID-19 vaccine in the last 6 months, now is the time to get one. And the good news is that we have an even better vaccine now, a bivalent vaccine, Pfizer and Moderna, than we used to have. And that bivalent vaccine is effective at fighting against Omicron, which is the currently circulating variant of COVID-19.
It's, I just can't. The bivalent vaccine was tested on 8 mice. You guys are aware of this. 8 mice. They tested it on 8 mice and released it to the public. Like, this is what happens when you allow them to do things like this. Then they do even worse things. You know, realistically, if they attempt public health measures again this winter, what needs to happen is the people that went along the first time have got to stand up and say, no, we're not playing your fucking face diaper bullshit. We're not going to roll up our sleeves for a faulty, seriously detrimental vaccine that could potentially kill us. It's over. I just don't think the government got the memo is realistically what's going on here. So if they do try again, if they thought the trucker convoy was bad, it's going to be worse because it'll be everybody coming out of the woodwork. Is my honest hope and true thoughts. Like, I think people that stood by and watched a small group of Canadians fight for our freedoms are now going to join that fight. So, like I said, the government of Canada is truly filled with the dumbest people in the world. Well, I guess every government. I mean, Joe Biden is no slouch when it comes to stupidity. But also, he's got the crutch of, he's late-stage dementia. These people in Canada are fully cognitive, fully functioning human beings that are... I just don't know how you stand up in front of people and at this late stage of the game and still wholeheartedly speak utter and complete lies and be able to sleep at night. I don't know how you do it. I don't. Unless you're pure evil, which maybe that's quite the option. These people are pure evil. But, you know, like I've said in multiple shows, these people that are still pushing this globalist narrative, I think they honestly think that they themselves, by doing it, will be saved in some way. No, they won't. They'll get steamrolled. These people, even all the way up to Justin Trudeau, if you want my honest-to-God opinion, if they actually were successful in getting 100% of the population vaccinated, they would have gotten rid of these people already. It's just sad. These are the biggest fools among us, are the ones that are our so-called leaders. In reality, they're public servants. And the public, I think, is at the stage where they are just not going to listen anymore. Okay, my friends, what I want to do next is I want to point your attention towards this interview with Richard Hirschman. He really does a great job breaking down all this stuff. You guys are aware of all this, but the fact that he gets into great detail about what these clots are. They're not normal clots. He explains the difference between normal clots and what these are. And I am seeing reports that 95% of early deaths, or 95% of the deaths at this point, since the rollout of the vaccines, embalmers are seeing this. So that goes to tell you that only 5% of the deaths that they're seeing right now are normal, natural causes of death. So that's and that directly coincides with the vaccine rate or the numbers of the vaccine. That's right up around that 90-95 percentage. they're saying in specific parts of the world. So that it's a direct correlation, my friends. So let's turn it over to this interview, and we will comment about it after, like we always do.
We are here with Richard Hirschman, and Richard has quite the story to tell. Been in the funeral business for more than two decades, and in the past couple of years, he's been seeing some very interesting things. Richard, thank you for joining me on Keep the Republic.
Nice to be here, Daniel.
It's a pleasure to have you here. You have been discovering some interesting things, but before we get into that, there's going to be some folks watching who don't know you and don't know your background, so please give us a little bit of a review.
Sure. Again, I'm Richard Hirschman. I'm a funeral director and embalmer. I started back in this field back around 2001. I remember being in the funeral home when 9/11 happened. So, you know, 2001, I was an apprentice then. I finished mortuary school and became fully licensed in 2004. And so I've been doing funeral work in the back, doing embalming as well as, you know, doing the funeral side of things, waiting on families and doing funerals for now 21 years. And been an interesting journey, and the things that I've been seeing in the last couple of years pretty much has to do with I've noticed there's something has changed with people's blood.
And you're kind of an answer to prayer for me, because I knew that people like you were out there, in that you have to have seen the trends and you know what the norm is. And then all of a sudden these shots come in, and we've been hearing all these reports from insurance companies that they've had an increase in all-cause mortality. That's, you know, it's one thing for an insurance company to report that, but I've been waiting for someone like you to come up to where I can say, are you in fact seeing an increase in your traffic in the funeral homes since the jab has started?
Yes, I have. And, you know, back when 2020 was coming along and towards the fall, we started noticing an increase in deaths. And of course, everything at that time was being contributed to COVID. Yes, we were getting busier at that time. And yes, I also noticed there was an increase in clotting in the towards the end of 2020.
And that's about the same time that the shots started to get passed out, right?
Well, actually the shots around here actually started around January of 21.
Okay.
And so when January came around and they started putting out these shots, everything was still being labeled COVID. So it seemed like the numbers of deaths shot through the roof. And of course, the clotting issues became worse. And they continued to get worse and worse. And then by around May of 2021, I started noticing this white fibrous material when I was embalming that were in these clots that were unique and very strange. And, you know, these increases that we've been noticing with young athletes and people that are dying suddenly of heart attacks and strokes. As I'm looking at this clotting issue, I'm saying to myself, well, of course there's an increase, but the blood is different. The blood doesn't look the same. The clots are abnormal, and especially this white fibrous material. That's the stuff that really stood out at me. And I was wondering, is this what's causing all of these sudden heart attacks and strokes in people?
Yeah, so you mentioned, I'm going to interrupt you for a sec. You have the clots that you saw an increase of. Was that regular clots?
You're talking in the end of 2020?
Yes.
I'm going to guess yes. We were just seeing a lot more of them, clots. I wasn't putting that there's a strangeness to the clots at that time, just right. That there was excessive clotting going on. And of course, now when I look back, I question why would that be? And one of the things that I'm wondering is, did it have to do with the protocols that was being implemented during the COVID pandemic? People were going to the hospitals and being treated with the remdesivir, which caused so many other health issues. So I'm wondering if that was the increase, because as 2021 started going along, the number of COVID deaths were on the decrease, but we were still getting a lot of deaths, and a lot of these people were still very clotted.
Well, the reason I ask is we did a medical roundtable and a medical truth symposium here in Idaho in October of 2020, and Dr. Ryan Cole participated in that. And at the time, he had mentioned that COVID was what he defined as a clotting disease, that it helped clot, it stimulated the clotting of the blood. And one of his recommendations, I distinctly recall him saying, was if you sense you're going to have COVID or you've got COVID, he says, get on aspirin and take aspirin every day for at least 30 days, because COVID is a clotting disease. And what you're saying pretty much backs that up.
I would agree. As a matter of fact, as I was seeing the increase in clotting in 2020 in the fall, I myself started taking an aspirin a day. I had COVID around the middle of 2020. And so as I was seeing all these clots happening, I was starting to take an aspirin a day, and I was recommending all of my friends to go ahead and take an aspirin a day. And I would have to agree with Dr. Cole. I think that COVID is causing clots, micro clots, and maybe some even a little bit larger clots. And that could explain also why we saw the increase in clotting in 2020. But these clots that are really abnormal, I didn't start seeing those until around May of 21, which would have been about somewhere around 4 or 5 months into the year.
Which would have been after the mRNA injections started.
Correct. Absolutely. And as the summer went along and these clots were getting worse, COVID deaths were down. We weren't getting nearly as many, but these clots were getting worse. And I started wondering if the vaccine might be the cause. So I started asking questions. I started trying to find out from the funeral directors if they could find out if that person was vaccinated. And most of the time, I feel as though it was linked. There was a connection there.
Tell us a little bit about these clots. Now, when I saw you at the conference, the victims conference, you had brought little vials. We'll show those on the screen here. But you had brought some vials that contained samples of these, for lack of a better term, clots. One of the things that you pointed out to me was they didn't just appear in the veins, which is normally where you said you see clotting, but these were also appearing in the arteries. Is that correct?
That's correct. That was one of the things that I found strange as 2021 was going along. I was seeing more and more clots in the arteries themselves. And one of the reasons why we find that is because when we are injecting embalming fluid, we typically like to use what's called a one-point injection, where we find one major artery that we push the fluid in, and we allow the blood to drain out of the adjoining vein, which is usually right next to the artery. Well, as we're pushing fluid in and we're not getting fluid into, like, say, we'll just pick on the left arm. Left arm's not getting fluid. And we can tell by the color of the arm And so we're forced then to raise an axillary or brachial up in the armpit or in the upper arm to find the artery that feeds that limb. Okay. And as I cut into open the artery up, I began to, you could see there was a clot inside. And sometimes when I pulled them out, they would be quite lengthy. And they were unusual because a normal clot is kind of like grape jelly, or at worst, kind of like a grape jam. And they typically will fall apart. Just like if you were to, you know, put some grape jelly on, you're making a peanut butter jelly sandwich and you spill some on your counter, it's hard to pick it up. You know, it wants to fall apart. It wants to just slide out of your fingers. Mm-hmm. So that's what a typical clot would do. But these are long and stringy, you know, and I have bunches of them. I have vials of this stuff here at the house. Because I've had many doctors that have been asking for samples so they can look at these and study them.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you said when we spoke face to face was that you had sometimes to use a forceps to get in there and pull these out. You couldn't just push them out with your fingers.
Well, okay. So usually the way the clots come out is by pressure. As you're putting fluid into the arteries, that pressure builds up in the system and it forces that fluid out into the vein. Sometimes these clots come out all on their own, but we usually use what's called a drain tube, which is a larger tube that allows the blood to drain out. But when these clots, they all bunch up and they get caught up in the front end of that, then it will not go through that tube. So we pull the tube out if we can't get it to come out through the tube. And then we use what's called angular forceps, kind of like a large tweezer that's angled. And we have to try to slide that up inside the vein to pinch on the end of it and pull them out. That kind of help them.
And let me ask you to reiterate, you said you've not had to do that ever in your 20 years of experience. The only time you've had to start doing this is since the injections started, the mRNA injections?
No, well, not exactly. There are times that we have to use forceps to get larger clots out of people that have been deceased. And sometimes when they get all bunched up, like if they're more like a grape jam instead of a jelly, they're thick, they won't slide through the tube either. And sometimes we have to use those angular forceps to go in there and pull those out and to kind of help guide them out. But as you're putting the forceps in there, you're kind of pinching them, mm-hmm. and you're kind of helping to pull them. But again, most of those clots, when they come out, you know, they're still kind of like a grape jelly. So it's, you know, they can still clog up a typical drain tube, but it's this white fibrous stuff is what's different about these newer clots.
And these things are not as gelatinous. They're long. They have a definitive structure to them. And it's not like a jello. They're very hard. They have some substance to them.
Yes, they're elastic. They stretch pretty well. And they don't dissolve. Like typically, if you were to take you can do this kind of like with grape jelly, the same thing. If you were to take grape jelly and you were to put it in your fingers and you just rub it together, it's going to dissolve. Mm-hmm. And if you add water to it, it's just going to dissolve and rinse away. Mm-hmm. This white stuff does not dissolve at all.
No, the vials that you showed me, you had cleaned them off, some of them. And it's a very distinctive looking, and almost looks like an piece of octopus leg or something like that.
Yes. Kind of like John O'Looney calls it. He says they look like calamari. The texture, and they kind of have that same texture.
Okay. So now you've sent these off to labs.
Sure. I've sent them to several doctors around. And people are looking into them. They're trying to study them and figure out what they are. I've heard a lot of talk about what they could be. We're waiting, of course, for the final final analysis. You know, Dr. Ryan Cole, I know, has been working on this, and others. Most of the doctors want to remain anonymous. Mm-hmm. I had sent samples to Mike Adams, and he run them through his ICP-MS, which is some kind of an analysis machine. Mm-hmm. That he melts it down and then it puts it through a plasma thing, and it basically reads out the elements to find out what it's made of, basically the elemental aspect of it. And he found out that it's only got like 4% iron. So he pretty much has said that this is not a typical blood clot because it doesn't have the iron content. He pretty much has said that this is not a typical blood clot because it doesn't have the iron content. And how the other elements that are in there, according to his analysis, got there, that's a good question.
It's a great question.
Yes.
Like, how does this end up inside of our blood system? Let's go back to the arteries and the veins issue, because I seem to recall you saying something about normally the clots are in the veins.
Yes. Normally clots typically run in the veins because the pressure is not as high, from what I understand. And, you know, some of this stuff I've been learning as I'm going along, because when I first came out and said that there were clots in arteries, I had several people try to say they're in the medical field and they're not saying they don't ever happen, but they're extremely rare, or they're very rare. And, but that's not the case. So I took a video of me taking one of these clots out of the artery prior to embalming. And if I see the clot in that artery, of course, I'm going to try to remove it because I don't need it to break away and then clog up somewhere and prevent me from doing my job. Mm-hmm. So the typical clots are almost always found in veins. That's nothing new. Deep vein thrombosis.
When you say typical, you're talking standard, regular, what we would think of as a blood clot.
Yes, a regular blood clot would be that. Would be in the vein. Now, every once in a while, and it's pretty rare that I would find a clot in an artery itself, and those times would usually happen. Let's say a person died and was found 4 days later. And, you know, that body has had time to really sit there for a while and the blood is pooled. It's not really moving. And so the blood is pooled into that artery. But even then, when I have those kind of clots, they are again like grape jelly or grape jam. They're not white, fibrous, stretchy clots like I'm in seeing these days.
Mm-hmm. Now, something else that you showed me was a video of the blood, and the blood is looking different. You're saying there's a color difference and also a texture difference sometimes. Could you speak to those?
Yes. Okay. So normal blood is basically just red. Sometimes the darkness can vary a little bit, depending on, you know, when we embalm, we're a lot often running water along the table at the same time to kind of help, you know, flush those fluids down and get them out of there. But the blood nowadays, it seems as though it's like it's dirty, if that makes sense. Sometimes the blood looks like it has grains of sand in it or coffee grounds. And when I see those grains of sand or coffee grounds, I'm thinking, you know, that can't be very healthy for an individual. And of course, I'm thinking, you know, a lot of times people are having sudden strokes and sudden heart attacks. I don't know how much clot is required to create a heart attack or a stroke, but I'm sure it's not very large. The other thing I was concerned about is a lot of times with COVID, they were talking about this COVID pneumonia, right?
Okay.
Now, I also know that if you get a blood clot in your lungs, it's going to make it difficult for the person to breathe. So I was asking myself this question, is like, is it really pneumonia, or is it all these little clots getting inside somebody's lungs causing a difficulty to breathe? Now, I'm not a doctor, and I'm, you know, but I'm just trying to think out loud and say, hey, you know, and this kind of goes what Ryan Cole said. Maybe this disease was more a clotting disease, a vascular disease, causing these microclots, causing people to have these issues with breathing because they're getting little small clots inside their lungs, making their oxygen exchange less. So, you know, it kind of just bears a question. And the whole point of me coming forward wasn't necessarily because to try to gross people out with what I'm seeing. But what I'm seeing is very vivid, and nobody's going to see this stuff. Because usually what we see in the embalming room doesn't come outside of the embalming room. It stays in there.
Right. You were telling me that this is almost like sacrosanct. It's stuff that you just don't talk about.
Right.
So it's not been, you know, very common for someone in your profession to come forward and say, hey, this is what I'm seeing, because this kind of conversation is off limits out of respect. And that's totally understandable. Now, you mentioned the blood, and it looks a little bit dirty and maybe a little bit abnormal as well. You and I met a person, we are aware of a person. I don't want to mention the person's name or the person's job, because the person wishes to remain anonymous because of the person's job. But that person showed me pictures of the blood work that was done. And this person had some procedures done that was filtering the blood and removing what looked like the similar kind of clots, the white fibrous clots that you're discussing, not the normal blood clots, but white fibrous clots coming out during the filtering process, but also showed me the screen, the shot of the blood cells themselves. And there was a doctor standing right there pointing about 50% of the cells were abnormally shaped. And the doctor said those cells would not be able to carry oxygen. So I think you're onto something when you're talking about, you know, this thing really affecting the blood. You're seeing a difference.
Right. That's what I was concerned about. There's something has changed with people's blood. Now, a lot of the reports that I'm hearing from different doctors is they're thinking that it's the spike protein causing this inflammation and causing these abnormalities in the blood. So COVID, like Dr. Cole said, which you were talking about, said this was causing a clotting disorder, the COVID itself, probably because of the spike protein, the toxic part of the COVID. But the vaccine, which of course we're speculating here, is full of the spike protein. So you're going to get a whole bunch of spike protein injected into your body. And from my understanding, what makes it even worse is the mRNA technology making your body create even more spike protein. So that makes me think the reason why I'm seeing these really large, wild looking clots might be because of the vaccine, or somebody somehow has gotten a whole lot of that spike protein in them.
Yeah. Well, there's so many people who have received these injections. I know they are the president of Bayer Pharmaceuticals actually gave a speech, and he was talking about this. He said, you know, had we come out and said, hey, we want to do gene therapy, 95% of the people would have said, no, thank you. But we now do it and we call it a vaccine. And so it really isn't a vaccine. The FDA had to change the CDC had to change their definition of a vaccine. They did it September 1st of last year, because I was one of the people among many who were pointing out, look, what these shots do, what you tell us that these shots do, does not match your definition, your own definition of a vaccine. And so then they change the definition of a vaccine. So they could, rather than change the injection, you change the name. So seems kind of odd. But I also interviewed Dr. Judy Mikovits, and she was explaining retroviruses to me and how when she was studying this with some other people, they were told that retroviruses don't exist, don't bother looking for them. But she found out that they do exist. And so basically you have, you know, your DNA affects your RNA, which then affects your proteins. And so here we're getting a messenger RNA. It's the middle process that's coming in, and it's supposed to affect the proteins, and as you say, the spike proteins. But what the theory is at this point among many doctors, and this actually is a study coming out now that's looks like it's going to verify this, is that it is acting like a retrovirus, and the mRNA, the messenger RNA, is coming in and it is rewriting DNA. It is a genetic therapy. And so now, just to give you a heads up, maybe you haven't heard of this yet. I just saw this just this past week, where a report has come out describing that. And Dr. Simone Gold was saying, as a lawyer, she's saying this opens up the door for lawsuits, because now places that want to inhibit your employment because you haven't received a jab might get violation of the genetic therapy law, because you can't discriminate based on genetics. So if you have not the right genetics, that's kind of backfiring on them a little bit. It's kind of weird.
It's really kind of scary, actually. they're editing. If they're editing stuff, how do you unedit it? I mean, this is something that's brand new and they're testing this on people. Now, the way I'm beginning to feel, and I didn't want to feel this way, but because of all of the injuries and the deaths that have happened, because they haven't stopped and they continue to press forward, makes me feel almost like this is nefarious. Now, I could be wrong on that, but they have, you know, taken peanut butter out of schools because some kids got an allergic reaction. I don't know anybody with an allergic reaction from peanut butter, but I know people that are vaccine injured. So this doesn't make sense. And one of my big concerns is, These clots that I have, if they determine that it is the vaccine causing these people to have all these strange clots, none of the bodies that I have embalmed with these clots were ever labeled a vaccine-related death. If it's linked to that, the death toll from the vaccine, and I'm just one embalmer, would be through the roof.
Well, we know, you guys are well aware, it's from the shots. That's where I'm going to end that interview, just to keep it under the hour mark. But it's kind of it's very intriguing to hear finally one of the morticians or embalmers break their silence and actually tell us what they are seeing. And what these, you know, technically we're still calling them clots, but you heard that they're being broken down now in labs, and these are not clots. These are something else. So you also heard Richard Hirschman tell you that if it's linked to the vaccines, the mortality rate is through the roof. That's horrifying when you think of the amount of people that have gotten these shots. But the one thing I didn't really know was the fact that the blood's coming out of these people dirty. Like he was describing it as coffee grains. So when they are getting the blood to actually flow, when it's not clotted off, the entire network of blood that comes out is showing microclots. Throughout this whole. You guys were just listening to the audio, but throughout it, he was showing videos of normal blood coming out during the embalming process, which is, It's just kind of a watered down blood. You can tell what it is. And then he showed a video of what I would have to assume is an injected person's blood coming out. And he's not exaggerating by calling it coffee grounds. Like, it looks just like that. Like, it's just full of these little micro clots pouring out down the embalming table. So the nice part was is he's tracking the types of clots. He gives you a timeline of when he started seeing them, and then, you know, what normal clots look like. It's just nice to get that breakdown. So me as well as you guys are kind of educated in what you know, they're seeing in the embalming world. There's plenty of evidence that this is potentially linked to the shots. Eventually it's all going to come out, or you know, like, you can't cover this up for forever. At this point, I'm sure you guys are like me and you know somebody that is injured, or, you know, the countless stories that I've heard already of people, young people with heart issues now, or rapid onset dementia, rapid onset cancers, people just not feeling good. That's another one that you hear all the time. I've heard this. I can't tell you how many times I've heard this. I just don't feel the same after the shots. Like, something's not right. And that's horrifying when you think about it, because that's typically people, I think, when put in the situation that let's just use cancer for example, a lot of people will say that, you know, I can just tell that something's not right, and then they keep pushing and pushing and pushing for tests because they don't feel right, and sure enough, they get diagnosed with some type of cancer. So my biggest fear, because I know people that have said this, that I just don't feel right, is that they are going to have issues down the road. And I'm sure it's the same for all of you. But at least we're learning as we go, and we're hearing from professionals in each area. You know, we've been doing nothing but tracking the doctors on this show, listening to what the doctors tell us. Unfortunately, they have been bang on the money, the ones that have been speaking out against this the whole time. And now you're hearing from the end cycle, from the morticians. So this is the first one. Richard Hirschman is the first one that I've heard of come out and show video evidence and testimony of what he's seeing since the rollout of the COVID-19 bioweapon, which was two stage, which was a released virus and then a shot. So I hope this was a really informative show for you guys. And once again, my apologies for being a little bit lengthy in the time between shows this round. Like I said, I'm just a busy guy. You guys know that. I don't have to explain it to you. But anyway, that's where we'll end this one. So like always, if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Facebook. It's Canadian Patriot Radio. The email is canadianpatriotradio@gmail.com. The Telegram room is t.me/CPR_2. And the website is canadianpatriotradio.ca. Thank you so much for tuning in again, my friends. And until next time, in all thy sons command. For joining us for another episode of Canadian Patriot Radio. CPR is not filmed before a live studio audience. If you like the show, friends, make sure you give us a thumbs up and share us on all your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.
You know,